Okay, we're beginning here from the two dots on the bottom of Pei Vavam Bet. Mishnah discussed that there are two types of kitin, or paradigms, one of which is kasher, and one of which is pasul. That is, if we write a get, let's say a piece of paper, a kalaf, that has on it multiple kitin, in one instance, when the edim sign on it, they're signing on all of the kitin, and it's kasher. In one instance, if they sign on it, they're only signing on the last of the kitin, not all of the gitin. So just imagine you have a long klaf and then get after get after get is written on it and then the edim sign on the bottom. So here the Mishnah says that if it's a klau, it's kasher. If it's to face the kol echad v'echad, it's pasul. Here the Amoraim are going to discuss what that means. Now, similarly, these gitim here are psulim because of the safek. We don't know whether the edim are on or not. It would be a get misafek. Other Rishonim say that it is pasul the gamre, because it's almost a case of mizuyaf mitocho. And since mizuyaf mitocho, the get is not kosher, because you cannot, from the get itself, figure out that it is a kosher get. Hechidami klau, hechidami tofes. These two cases that are brought in the Mishnah, what is the actual scenario that we're speaking about? Am Rabbi Yochanan, zman echad ukulan zehu klau. When are they considered to be a single unit? Is when there's only one dating for all the shtarot that are found there. So you have a date on top, signatures on the bottom, everything in between basically is captured by that signature, because a single date shows you that they are all one unit. Zman l'kol echad v'echad, zehu tofes. If each get has a separate date on top of it, that segregates the digitin throughout the klaf. Therefore, when they sign on the bottom, they're only signing on the last get that's there, or the one that's connected to the date that is above them. All the ones above that are separate because they're dated separately from the final get. Even when you have a single date for all of them, that's also still considered to be separate. When is it considered to be that there is single unit of gitin? It's written on there. Anu ploni u ploni, geirashnu nishotenu plonit u plonit. So there's a language or a sentence that basically incorporates all of them together. It lists Reuven, Shimon, Levi, divorced their wives, Rachel, Leah, and Chano. That's a sentence that basically brings together all the gitin, and in bringing all the gitin together, then a signature at the bottom would incorporate all the gitin because of that sentence in the beginning that brings them together. Okay. This is like a header sentence that amalgamates all the gitin there into a single get because of the introductory sentence that brings them together. But that still means that you have to have gitin that are written there. The question of how these gitin are written is not clear. It seems that you write a get in the beginning. That means that you have this introductory sentence. You have a full-fledged get for the first individual. And then the question is, when you say v'chein leploni uplonit, and that's equivalent of saying etc., which is that just like we have a full-fledged get for the previous person, v'chein leploni uplonit just says, and that too, or do they really write out a separate get for each one of the individuals? That is a machloket erishonim, as to whether they actually write out the get each time when they're doing it, or they just write v'chein, and they're just trying to use whatever get was above and include the other, incorporate the other individuals. Rabbi Abba asked, the Rabbi Yochanan damar, zman echad ukulan zehu klau, we have a single dating on the top, then that brings them together as a single unit. Why don't we worry about the fact when the edim signed, they signed on the last get that was there? Don't we have a braita or tosefta? Edim chatumim al shelat shalom beget. If the edim are signed on shelat shalom, which is how you're doing, they're signed on the area which is a greeting, nothing to do with the core get. Pasul. Chashin and shema shelat shalom chatumu. We worry about the fact that the edim signed with regards to the letter of social graces or the part of the get that says, hi, how are you doing? And then they sign on that. There's a closing paragraph that asks about the well-being of the individual, and the edim are signed with that. We assume that they're signed on that and not on the get itself. So if that's the case, why don't we say the same thing here? That they're signed on the last paragraph or the last get that's written there. Why are they signed on all the gitin that are there? It says, la vitmar la. Didn't we have a qualification that tosefta, that amar abo, the didi mefarshile mine de Rabbi Yochanan? I was explained this Shita Rabbi Yochanan, Shalu Pasul, that Tosefta that says that they are Pasul, meaning if they sign on it, we assume that they signed on the greetings at the end of the get and not on the get itself, that's when the word Sha'alu is written. But if they write Vish'alu, that they wrote and the greeting, Kasher, the Vav HaChibur connects the greeting at the end of the get to the get itself, and therefore when they deem sign on it, they're not only signing on whatever they are under, they're also signing on the paragraphs above it, because there's something that connects between the paragraphs. And that is the Vav HaChibur, which indicates that this is not the beginning of a paragraph, but rather connected to a paragraph that is above it. Hachanami. So to in our case over here, Tichtibe Ploni, Uploni, Uploni. That there's a Vav HaChibur between each of the Gitin. That Ploni Migaresh Plonit, Ve Ploni Migaresh Plonit. The next get begins with that. And then the third get begins Uploni Migaresh Plonit. So in each of these instances, the Vav HaChibur connects between the different Gitin. And that's why if they're signed on the bottom, it would incorporate all the Gitim according to Rabbi Yochanan. Vitu, the Rabbi Yochanan. Again, we have a problem with Rabbi Yochanan Shita, which is, Damar Zman Nekol Echad Zeu Tofes. If they have a separate dating for each one of them, that's because they read a Tofes and it's Pasul. My Iriya Mishum Tofes. Why is the issue that each get is written separately? Typically, Davile Nichta Bayom V'Nechtam Balayla. Why don't we say that the problem here is that it's written during the day and signed at night, as Rashi notes over here, Nechtam Balayla is Lav Dafka. Doesn't mean literally it was signed at night. It's just an example. And it was, since it was brought this way earlier on in the Nesechta, they use this as the paradigm. But it's an example of a get which is written on one day and signed on a different day. Doesn't have to be that night. It could be at any time period afterwards. But there's a gap between the writing of the get and the signing of the get. The Gemara's assumption here is that if you have a Zman L'Kol Echad V'Echad, there's a separate date for each get there. The Gemara's assumption now is that they're written on different days. So you have one on the 3rd, one on the 4th, one on the 5th, and the Edim signed at the bottom. But by definition, if the Edim are signed on the bottom and they're written on 3 different days, the Gitin, then there is a gap between the writing of the get, or at least the first get, and the signatures of the Edim at the bottom. And that should be the Psul. Forget about the fact that there's a separate date or a separate language for each of the Gitin. You don't even need that to get to the Psul. You have a Psul without that because of the fact that it is dated on a different day that it is signed. Amalei, Mark Shisha, Bred, Rav Chistel, Rav Ashi, Hachi Amrina, Mishmed, Rav Yochanan. They explain that this is the way that the member of Yochanan was laid out. Ditri Buhu, Bechad B'Shaba, Bechad B'Shaba. That every one of them says, on Sunday, on Sunday, on Sunday. In other words, they share a common date between them. They're all dated on the same day. And therefore, when it's signed at the bottom, it's not Nichta Bayom V'Nechtam Balayla, because it was signed on the same day. Whatever day is mentioned in all the Gitin, we assume that the signature covered all of those Gitin, because they're all done on the same day. And again, then the problem becomes this Tofes issue, which is that's why it's Pasul, and not because simply it was written on one day and signed on a different day. Amalei Ravina the Ravashi. The Reish Lakish. According to Reish Lakish, Damar Zman Echad Dukulan Nami Tofes Avi. Even if when you have a single date on the entire list of Gitin there, that is considered to be separate Gitin and Pasul. Ve'echidami Klal. What is the case of Klal? The case of when it's considered to be a single unit. Dichtiv Be'achi. It's written at the opening sentence, the opening paragraph. Anu Ploni Uploni. Gerashtu Nishotenu Plonit Uplonit. Again, the language that we saw above. Nimtzu'u Shtei Nashim Mitgarshot Beget Echad. From that, it turns out that two women are being divorced by a single get. Because here, instead of writing a separate get for each individual couple, they grouped all the couples together and said, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, divorce their wives, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. By making it into a list, you make it into a single get that now is covering all the parties that are involved. V'Torah Amra V'Kotov La. The Torah says, V'Kotov La V'Lo La V'Lechaverta. That the writing has to be, we learn from the word la, lishma. There is a second time it says the word la, so they could be learning from the second time. Or it could just be the natural definition of a katav la. You're writing a get for her. Part of lishma means that it's written for her exclusively and for no one else. And so over here, you're not doing that because you are joining the gitin together by writing all their names in a single sentence, opening sentence. Those Rishonim want to suggest here that this is according to Rabbi Meir and not according to Rabbi Elazar, and that in Ochanami, the Rabbi Elazar, you could have the two women bo mifia in a single get. It's only Rabbi Meir who says that the cut of law references the Chatimat Eidim, that you need a separate Ishur of the Eidim for each get. And even when they sign a multiple getin, we can look at it as if they're me'asher each get. But when you have two women in a single get, that fails because the signatures of the Eidim are not going on that particular woman, but rather on this joint get, which doesn't work. Whereas Rabbi Elazar, all you need is Eidei Mesira. And therefore, it's possible that you could argue that he would think that this is kasher, because the get's written Lishma, and you have to give it to each of the two women, and it's fine. Although you could argue, like Rashi did before, Rashi explained before, that it is, as we saw in yesterday's daf, that it has to be Tiva Lishma Mivureret, or an Itinya Lishma Mivureret, and that is lacking when both women are incorporated into a single get. So Gemara says, the Hodor Kotov, so this is what the Gemara says, that they repeated it afterwards, Ploni Geresh Plonit, Uploni Geresh Plonit. So there's this opening sentence that incorporates all of the different couples together and says, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi divorced their wives, Rachel, Leah, and Chana. Then the next paragraph begins, Reuven divorces his wife, Leah, and then they have a get. And then Shimon divorces his wife, Rachel, and they have the paragraph of the get. And then the last that get says, Levi divorces Chana. So there's a repetition later on to give each one of them a separate get, but the opening sentence is what joins them together. And that's what, according to Reish Lakish, makes it into a single get, is that incorporation of all the names together in that first sentence. And again, if you believe that they're not really writing out the get each time, but simply saying v'chein, that they write the get the first time, then afterwards they say, and also Shimon divorces Rachel, and also Levi divorces Chana, then the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is simply whether that opening sentence was written or not. That's really the key difference between them. According to Reish Lakish, if you have the opening sentence, that's what makes the difference. According to Rabbi Yochanan, you could even just have a single date on the top. You don't need that opening sentence to join them all together. So Amalei Ravina the Ravashi. Umayshna mehad de Tanyo. How is this different than the Braita? Kutev kol nechasav l'shnei avadav. Someone writes or gifts all of his property to his two servants, his slaves. Kanu umishachrim zedzeh. They acquire each other, and they acquire everything, and then they free each other. So Gemara says, from this, it seems like, he wrote a single get shichur, document of emancipation, to both slaves, and then he hands them the document, says that he gifts all of his property to these two individuals. From there you see that you can put in a single document of emancipation two slaves. And we know that the dinim of freeing a slave and gitin are learnt one from the other. That means here, if you're writing two avadim in a single get shichrur, that means that the same should be two by gitin. Or if it's not good by gitin, then how is it good here by get shichrur? Our answer is, v'lav ukimna b'shtei shtarot. Then we already qualify this and explain that over there, there were two separate documents. There's one document for each eved. Well, you have a separate document for each eved, then you just need to look at who got it first, and they're the owner of the property. So the Gemara there says, they wrote two separate documents and handed them together b'vat achat. They handed to both of the demons simultaneously, therefore their acquisition of the estate happened simultaneously, and that's why they both own each other and they free each other. Tanya kavati de Rabbi Yochanan. Tanya kavati de Reish Lakish. A bright that supports Rabbi Yochanan Shita. A bright that supports Reish Lakish Shita. Tanya kavati de Rabbi Yochanan. We have a bright that supports Rabbi Yochanan's position. Chamishashi katvu betocha get. Ish ploni megresh plonit. Uploni plonit. Uploni plonit. If you have five individuals who are mentioned to get, that so-and-so divorces so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so, zman achad l'kulan, and one date on all these gitin that are there, v'edim ilamato, and the edim are signed at the bottom, kulan ksherim. All the gitin are ksherim because of a single date, and the connection between all of them, you see a vav achibur between each one of them, v'tinatein l'kol achat v'achat. And then you have to give the document to all of them, since they're all incorporated in a single document. You have to hand the document to each one of them because one of those gitin in there is relevant to each of the women who are receiving the get. If each one of those gitin in there is dated separately, by edim in the mata and edim assigned at the bottom, it's sheedim nikrem yimokasher. The get that the edim are read with, meaning that the final get at the bottom, that is kasher. The remaining gitin are problematic. Behuda ben b'teiro omer im yesh revach benehem pasul. That you don't need a date to separate, you simply need space between them in order to separate them. Imlav kasher. She'ein zman mafsikan. And otherwise it is kasher. What it means that there's space between them is not clear over here. Does revach literally mean physical space? That they left the gap and then they go down and that's what makes them sulim? Or rather say simply that if you're missing the vav achipur, that's the equivalent of a revach. So it's not literal revach over here. But rather figurative revach because there's no vav achibur. It's not clear what the size of the revach is. It's not clear what exactly the revach is. But he says if it looks like they're separate gitin or separate entities, then we consider each one of them to be individual and the edim that sign at the bottom are only signing on the last of the gitin. Because the date doesn't make them into separate entities. So it's seemingly if you wrote the date under the before the first one and then a date before the second one, but left no space between them, then the lack of space shows you that they're all one big document. And when they sign all the documents, even though there's a separate date for each of the documents. Whereas if there's a space that's left there, the assumption is that space was left there for signatories to put their names over there. Since there's nobody signed there and only on the bottom, we worry about the fact that that space was indicating that it was a separate get. Tanya Kabbalti the Reish Lakish, you have a bright that supports Reish Lakish's position. Chamisha shekatvu klal betocha get. If five individuals wrote a general sentence that incorporated everybody in it, which is, anu ploni uploni gerashu nishotenu ploni uplonit uplonit, then afterwards we have a repetition, like we said before, ploni gerash plonit uploni gerash plonit. Again, all of these are separate. Bizman echadu kulan. And then there's a single date on it. Ba'edim elamata, and then the edim are signed at the bottom. Kulan sherin. All the gitin then are kasher. Bitinatein the kolachad v'chad, and then again you have to deliver this document to all the five women. Zman the kolachad v'chad, v'revach the kolachad v'chad. If there's a date between each of them, and spacing between each of them. Ba'edim elamata, and the edim are at the bottom, and she'edim nikraim yamo kasher. Wherever the edim are read with is kasher. Rabbi Meir Omer, afapi she'ein revach b'nehem pasul. Even without a space between them, they're still pasul. Shazman mafsikan. It's sufficient that the dating separates them. Seems to be similar to the machloket we saw in the bright that supported Rabbi Yochanan as to whether you need a gap in order to create the separation, or is the date itself enough? So you have here Rabbi Meir saying that the date itself is enough, which is the position of the Tanakhama in the previous Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira said, no, you need a revach, not the date's not enough. You need a space, which seems to be akin to the Tanakhama in the Braita that we just brought. Reish Lakish, ma'ir yazman lekol echad v'echad. In this latter half of the Braita, it says that if you have a date, a separate date on each one of them, that separates and makes them into separate kitin. But for Reish Lakish, you don't need that. According to Reish Lakish, even if there's a single date on the top, it's still problematic unless you have that sentence that incorporates everybody together. Says, that's only if they didn't join them together in the beginning. Here, where they joined them together in the beginning, in ilodo. So Reish Lakish makes a statement here, which says that if you have their opening sentence that incorporates everybody together, which is, anu ploni uploni uploni kirashnu nishotenu plonit plonit uplonit, if that's the opening sentence, then, by definition, it's a single get, and if it's signed on the bottom, they're all good, unless there's something that indicates separation. That indication is what's mentioned in the Braita. If you have dating between them, you have spacing between them, even if you have that sentence that brings them all together, that's not enough, and the dating or the spacing will break them apart. On the other hand, if you do not have that incorporating sentence in the beginning, then, no matter what it is, even if they're all together, even if there's only a single date there, only the last one is kasher, because you're missing the item that brings them all together. Now again, for Reish Lakish, even that sentence that brings them together, you still need each individual to be mentioned separately so that you don't have one get for five women, but rather have five separate gitin, which is important over here, because we need a separate get for each woman. So you have here a challenge or a tension between getting a separate get to each woman, but in the same vein, creating a single entity where the gitim sign and it's considered to be a signature for all the gitim that are there. So that tension is what Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokesh are discussing here. I'm trying to have separate gitim, but in the same hand, I'm trying to say they're all one for the signatures. So that tension pulls you in a different direction about how tightly they need to be together versus how separate they can be and have the signature still count towards the separate gitim above. All right, now next Mishnah. Next Mishnah can be read simply. But Rashi seemingly has a girsa in the Mishnah as well in the Gemara later on, which forces him to explain the Mishnah in a more complex manner than need be. Which is, Shnei Gitin shekatvan ze b'tzad ze. Two Gitin that are written in parallel. One on the right side, one on the left side. Coming down, one column is the first get, the second column is the second get. Ushnayim edim, ivrim bayim itachat ze, l'tachat ze. And then at the bottom of the get you have two. Ivrim over here is not just Jewish, but edim signing in Hebrew. The edim that sign in Hebrew sign from right to left. So they have their signatures at the bottom, running from the right side, meaning under the get number one, to the left side, to under get number two, because they write Reuven ben Yaakov. We'll see in the Gemara where the Reuven and ben Yaakov is laid out, but assuming that their name runs from right to left under both gitin. Ushnayim edim yevanim bayim mitachat zeh, l'tachat zeh. And then after those two edim, we have two Greek edim. Again, now Greek does not mean that they are Greek, they're Jewish. But they are writing in Greek. They are using a language that runs left to right. And therefore, starting from the left side means that it begins under the left column, and then their signature carries on until the right column. The Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot draws a picture of that and shows that exactly, which is that you have here, you have Reuven ben Avraham, or Reuven ben Yaakov, and Shimon ben Yaakov, Eid. And then under them, he writes over here, you have Jacob Phileas Dantestis, and God Phileas Natantestis, literally written in Greek. So you're using Hebrew lettering and Hebrew writing for the first two Edim running right to left. And then the Yevanim are writing in Greek, and they're using the Greek alphabet, and they are writing left to right in the Greek alphabet like it is written. And so therefore you have the first two Edim are read with the right column, and the second two Edim would naturally be read by the left column, except they're separated from it by the two Edim that signed before them. So Edim Arishonim Nikraim Imo Kasher. Whoever gets the first Edim are read with, that is Kasher. The second set of Edim are not Ksherim. The question of why they're not Ksherim, the Gemara will deal with, but that will answer your question as to what the problem is here. What do we assume that everybody is signing under the get that their name starts with? And that's the question that the Mishnah obviously is addressing, which is that even though it seems that we have two Edim under the right column and two Edim under the left column, we don't say that. Why we don't say that, the Gemara will discuss. So again, reading like the Rambam, and the Tosafot Arid says something similar, then all we have here is alternating Edim. The first Ed is signed right to left. The second Ed is signed left to right. The third Ed is right to left. The fourth Ed is left to right. Again, alternating between writing in Hebrew, then Greek, Hebrew, and then Greek. So, bayim mitachat zeh l'tachat zeh, shneem psulim. They go from one to the other. They're both psulim. Rashi's girsa, if you could look in the Rashi, says, bayim mitachat zeh l'tachat zeh, and it seems like he has another line of, bayim zeh l'tachat zeh, l'tachat zeh. And therefore, Rashi comes up with a difficult explanation of this part of the Mishnah, which I'll explain to you in one second. Again, the Rambam and the Tosafot on the Amud Bet makes it clear that they do not agree with Rashi, but they do say that Rashi seemingly had a different girsa, and that girsa is what compels him to explain the Mishnah in this manner. And that is, if you look in the picture that is found in the Rashi, that picture describes what Rashi think happened in this latter case of the Mishnah. It's incorrectly marked in the Gemara as to reference to the first case in the Mishnah. It's really not. It's really on the second case in the Mishnah. And you can see at the way that the picture is written out, so that the first line in the picture is the bottom of the first get and the bottom of the second get. And those are the columns. Then the first individual signs Reuven ben Yaakov Ivri. Ivri meaning that he is a Hebrew aid written in Hebrew. But he writes from right to left across Reuven ben Yaakov. The second aid is a Greek aid, and he writes Yosef ben Shimon. But when he writes Yosef ben Shimon, it begins Yosef under the left column, and then writes ben Shimon under the right column. So he drops down a line to finish off his name. His name begins on the left column on one row, drops down a row, and finishes off his name under the first column, ben Shimon. Then the next Hebrew aid does the same thing. At the end of the line of the Ben Shimon, he begins Kahat, who's an Ivri, is the Hebrew aid. Ben Levi, again, he begins under the left column, Kahat, And then the Ben Levi, he finishes off a row down after dropping down a row and says, Ben Levi, then you have a blank space left. And then the final aid, which is a Yevani aid, says, Yachzeel Ben Naphtali Yevani, is written underneath both of them on a single row. The way Rashi sets it up is he has the first aid, the Hebrew aid, written on a single row. The last aid, which is a Greek aid, written on a single row. The two middle aidim start seemingly their name on the left side under the second column, then drop down a row and complete their name. And that means that there's a gap left on the first one on the right side and on the last one on the left side. So that's how Rashi sets it up. Again, Rashi's doing this because of the nature of the Lashon HaMishnah, which says that Ba'im mitachat zeh letachat zeh, goes from this one to under that one, indicating that the Edim seemingly are going from one to the other. And we'll explain that when we get to there in the Gemara. But because of that, Rashi explains it this way. Number two thing that Rashi does is, and this is also somewhat difficult, again, the Rambam's weight is much easier, which is that when we say that the Hebrew and the Greek, they literally wrote in Hebrew and wrote in Greek. And the Hebrew writing went right to left, and the Greek writing went left to right, and it's very easy to understand. Rashi over here claims, and it's somewhat of a stira within the Rashi itself, he says, ubelishon yivanit, that they wrote in Greek. So seemingly they wrote in Greek. Yet, when Rashi goes to describe it, it says that when they write Yosef ben Shimon in the get, you do not understand that to mean Yosef, the son of Shimon, but rather it really means Shimon ben Yosef. Because if you write Yosef ben Shimon, if you're to read that left to right, then it really reads as Shimon ben Yosef rather than Yosef ben Shimon. So one way to read it is to say that Rashi believes that they wrote in Hebrew letters. Everything was written in Hebrew. Just, they were Edim that wrote in Hebrew, but they are speakers of Hebrew, writers of Hebrew, and therefore you read it right to left. And then there were Greek Edim who also wrote in Hebrew, but we assume because they're Greek, we read it left to right. So even though they wrote Yosef ben Shimon, they really mean Shimon ben Yosef because you read in Greek, or the way that they write it would be left to right. So they used Hebrew letters, but they really would read it left to right. So it happens today in Hebrew, and sometimes when people who are unfamiliar with English, they write in Hebrew, they'll write the English, but they'll write it in a manner that conforms to right to left. Even though they're writing left to right in terms of the lettering, they'll still write the words as if the sentence is right to left. Or in instance, you have that problem today in the right to left language with math. Because generally math is written left to right, which is you have 15 times 4. So that's what you write, 15 times 4 equals, and they have the equals on the right side. Even in languages that write right to left, how do they set up the problem? Do they set up the problem as left to right, because the numbers are running that way? Or do they set up it right to left, and you can have the same confusion in the math? So it happens that you could have exactly what Rashi is describing, even though you're writing in Hebrew, it could still be that they're trying to make it left to right, instead of right to left. That's one way to explain the Rashi. The other way people explain the Rashi is to say Rashi believes that they were also written in Hebrew, but that they had a different formulation. Whereas in Hebrew, if you wrote Yosef ben Shimon, you wouldn't believe that means Yosef the son of Shimon. In Greek, when they write Yosef ben Shimon, it means Yosef ben and then Shimon, which is that Yosef's son is Shimon. And that's the meaning of it. And why that's the meaning of it is that just because that was the way that they wrote, meaning that contextually, when you wrote that, that was the way they presented it, that Joseph's son, Shimon, is Shimon. And therefore, instead of saying that it means Yosef ben Shimon, Joseph the son of Shimon, say Joseph's son is Shimon. Divrei Yamim does that, by the way. It's not just Greek. Divrei Yamim has many psukim that are ambiguous, in which it says, b'no, and then it writes a name. It's unclear whether that means that the son of the next name, or b'no means that so-and-so's son is Yosef's son is Shimon. And that's the way that it's written in Divrei Yamim, and many times in Divrei Yamim, it's unclear which way the b'no is modifying. Is it modifying that so-and-so is the son of so-and-so? Or is it saying so-and-so's son is? Same thing that seems to be what Rashi is describing over here. That's another way to explain the Rashi, is that just that's the way they read it. Or the last possibility is that they wrote in Greek. But even though they wrote in Greek, that's the way that it's explained in Greek. Just because the people would read it, think they would read right to left, they'll read it as Yosef ben Shimon. But since it really means Shimon ben Yosef, because it's written in Greek, they'll mistakenly think it says Moshe Yosef ben Shimon, but it really says Shimon ben Yosef, because in Greek, you read left to right rather than right to left. Now, that explanation, again, is like the explanation of the Rambam. That's the easiest way to explain the Mishnah, but it's absent in Rashi. Rashi never mentions right to left and left to right, which is the easiest way to explain the Mishnah. Rashi never mentions that. He speaks about this idea that Yosef ben Shimon is really Shimon ben Yosef, and that's why the first two explanations seem more likely in Rashi. Again, I noted before that Rashi says it's Bilashon Yivanit. This guy is writing in Greek, yet when he explains it with Hebrew names. He says Yosef ben Shimon and Shimon ben Yosef, as if that was the way that was written, unless you just say Rashi is using the Hebrew because we're speaking Hebrew and it's written in Hebrew here, but really it said Josephus ben Simeon, or Simeon ben Josephus. It was really written in Greek. Rashi is just using the Hebrew names. Again, that's a little bit of the difficulty within Rashi. So now the Gemara says, Vilit kasher, hai beruvein, v'hai beben Yaakov aid. Gemara says here, if the first aid that is signed there is Ruvain ben Yaakov aid. Aid is the closure that we bring to the name at the end of the line. So when you have Ruvain under the first column, ben Yaakov under the second column, let us suggest that you actually have two signatures over here. Ruvain is signing under the first column. Ben Yaakov is signing under the second paragraph. And the way that Rashi explains it is, so he says, V'yichshiru shneim ayidei shnei edim arishonim. And they'll become kasher, according to this, by the first two edim, by saying that it's Ruvain and then Ben Yaakov. Now, even though aid is only written once at the end of that line, we'll just assume that the Ruvain got captured in that aid because it was written at the end of that row. Since at the end of the row, it modifies or qualifies both Ruvain and Ben Yaakov. Or the possibility that the word aid is not makev, even though we prefer it, and that's what's going to be said in the Mishnah coming up. Nevertheless, if it's left out, it's not posel. So even though the simplest way to read it would be Ruvain ben Yaakov, that's one name. Nevertheless, the way the Gemara is saying is if Ruvain's under one column, ben Yaakov's under another column, let us assume that they're two separate edim, or maybe even the same person signing twice. And he'll read that as either he says, you know what, I'll sign the first time Ruvain, the second time ben Yaakov, because in the end, it'll make it look nice. It'll look like Ruvain ben Yaakov, and then it happens to be my name anyway. Or if it's two separate individuals, one Ruvain and one ben Yaakov, but that way you'd have two edim, and you should be makshir both kitim. Because then the first two signatures in Hebrew, you have their first names on the right column, their father's name on the left column, and now you have signatories to both kitim right in a row without any gapping. You don't even need the Greek edim. Dahatnan, because we have a Mishnah, ben ish ploni eid kasher. That if you write in a get, instead of writing Ruvain ben Yaakov aid, you just write ben Yaakov aid kasher. So my answer is that the answer is Ruvain ben Akamo, that underneath the first column it says Ruvain ben, and then Yaakov aid abatra is under the second column. So the Ruvain ben is together under the first one, and Yaakov aid is under the second one. So the Gemara says, Velit kasher hai Ruvain ben. Let the first one be kasher with Ruvain ben. With kasher hai be Yaakov aid. And the second one with Yaakov aid. That's not, we have a Mishnah. Ish ploni aid kasher. You just write your name and then the word aid, it's fine. And here again, you would have to suggest when the Gemara is saying Ruvain ben and then Yaakov aid, that the aid is modifying both of them. And therefore, even though he didn't write aid, Ruvain ben is modified by the aid. The way Rashi reads it over here is, Demashmani bno shel Ruvain. I am the son of Ruvain, kederech perish chatimati yavanim. The way that I explained before, the way that the Greeks sign, when you say Ruvain ben, it doesn't mean Ruvain the son of, it rather means Ruvain's son. And that's what Ruvain ben would mean. So it's Ruvain's son, and that's it. And you'd read it that way, so you can make sense of writing Ruvain ben. And then Yaakov would be the second signature over there. There's a guy, Ruvain ben, who's an aid, and they have a guy, Yaakov, who's an aid. So that's what Tosafot says over here. Perish bekodesh Ruvain ben mashma ani bno shel Ruvain. Kederach sheperish chatimata yivanim. And he says, bechinam perish sheyaakov hu ish acher. It was unnecessary that he said Yaakov is a totally different individual. This is your question. How many people are signed here? According to Rashi, you have Ruvain ben signed, and then the separate guy came along whose name is Yaakov and signed on the left. That's the way Rashi learns it, that you have two separate individuals signing on here. First one is Ruvain ben, Ruvain's son, and the second one is Yaakov that signed on here. Tosafot says it's completely unnecessary. It could be one individual that's signing here, and he's just signing his name differently. He's writing his first name on the second get, Yaakov, and on the first get he's saying Ruvain ben, the son of Ruvain. I'm the son of Ruvain, and that's what has been written on the first one, but it's the same guy. The same Yaakov is the son of Reuven. It doesn't make sense to say that he signed it like the way of the Yevanim. And therefore he says, I'd rather, here's a third way to explain it, Reuven ben, dekamarhu ben Yaakov. Reuven ben means Reuven the son of. And then he writes Yaakov on the other side. He didn't bother to write his father's name, because he knew he was going to sign Yaakov on the other side. So he writes Reuven ben Yaakov, so that's literally his name. His name is Reuven the son of Yaakov. So in the first one he writes Reuven ben and assumes that you know that it is Yaakov. And then he signs Yaakov on the second get. And now it looks like Reuven ben Yaakov. So in that way he says, I've signed both gitin. One get as Reuven ben, Reuven the son of Yaakov. And the second one as Yaakov, or really meaning the son of Yaakov. And therefore, both gitin should be kosher then in that case, according to Tosafot. Rashi obviously didn't like that interpretation because the Yaakov that is signed on the left side, according to Tosafot, means the son of Yaakov and not Yaakov himself. And where do you see that ben? That ben is only written under the first get. And again, Tosafot says that there is circumstantial evidence, the fact that he put his father's name under the other get, and together with the first get, it would read his full name. And therefore, it would actually make sense in some ways to say that he signed both of the documents in such a manner that once you read them, you'll actually see his whole name there, even though he's signing separately on each of the two columns or gitin that are there. So Rashi, again, explains otherwise. And Tosafot says, even if you explain it like Rashi, you don't have to go as far as Rashi to say that it's two separate individuals. You could argue it's one individual, and that it's Reuven's son, Yaakov. And now he signed. First time he signed as Reuven's son. The second time he signed as Yaakov, and it's one individual, but he's signing separately under the two gitin. So for that reason, the Gemara wants, why aren't both gitin ksherim? Because we have a signature under each of the gitin. So now the Gemara says, Zelo katav eid. He never wrote the word eid. So without the word eid, then it doesn't count, because it says, Umatnitan dafka nakat. And therefore the two mishnayot that we brought until now, that explain when you sign with an aid, the only way to write it is, if you write your name, your first name, Reuven aid, that works. If you write Ben Yaakov aid, that also works. If the word aid is appended to those statements. If you write Reuven Ben Yaakov, you don't need to write aid. I mean, it's better, it's nicer to do it, but you don't have to. So that way, there's three different ways you can sign a get. Either Reuven Ben Yaakov, which is a full name, or you can sign it as Reuven aid, or Ben Yaakov aid, because that indicates that even though there's not a full name here, they're nevertheless acting as an aid by writing either their first name or the Ben Yaakov is acting as the signature of those individuals. So that's what's lacking over here, which is that you have Reuven Ben under the first column, Yaakov under the second column, and the word aid is absent. So since the word aid is absent, we can't just say that it is aid. It's telling us that this is two separate names, but rather it must be one name because the word aid is absent. And without the absence of the word aid, you can't have just the first name or just your last name, or meaning your son of, those don't work independently unless the word aid is mentioned there. And we saw that in both of the Mishnayot that we quoted before, which is, we said, Ben Ish Ploni Aid Kasher. See, the word aid is added over there. And in the second Mishnah, Ish Ploni Aid. So-and-so an aid. The word aid, now we were taking literally, has to be written there in order for it to be kasher. And that is lacking in our case. V'ibay Deima, Olam Dichtiv Aid. He did write the word aid, and it would have worked. But we know about that signature, the second signature, that it's not Yaakov's signature, and therefore it must be connected to the Reuven ben Yaakov, because otherwise we would not have a separate signature over here. Again, it's clear that it must be Reuven ben Yaakov then, and Rashi is saying that Reuven's son, Yaakov, is signing it. And therefore we see that it can't be that way because it's not Yaakov's handwriting, it is Reuven's handwriting. And if it's Reuven's handwriting, it must mean that it's Reuven ben Yaakov, and not Reuven ben, the son of Reuven, and his name is Yaakov, because Yaakov isn't signed anywhere here. It's not his handwriting. And therefore, you can't interpret it that way, because it's the wrong signature. The fact that we know that the handwriting here is determinant, which is that if you were to read it as Yaakov ben Reuven, even though it's written Reuven ben Yaakov, then you should see Yaakov's handwriting. That's not what we see. You see Reuven's handwriting, which means that it definitely means Reuven ben Yaakov and not Yaakov ben Reuven. If that's the case, the Yaakov that signed under the second one is not his signature. It's his father's name and not his signature. And if that's the case, you can't read it as being a signature under each column separately. And as Tosfot points out, that if we didn't have any reason to believe that this was one name, because we had evidence that it's not his handwriting, or there's some question or aspersions cast about the get, the assumption would be that we do have two signatories over here, and the get, both columns would be kosher, even though, again, it looks like you only have one name here, but if we don't have evidence to the contrary, from our Gemara, it seems like the default status is that you actually have two signatures and two kosher gitin. Gemara says, "Bilma bishma davua chotim." Who says that he doesn't sign with his father's name? I mean, that you just said to me that you know that it's not Yaakov's handwriting. But who says that Reuven doesn't use his father's name to sign, or the equivalent of today of using your surname to sign? Instead of signing your first name and then last name, Simon Wolf, you would sign it as Mr. Wolf. And so there are times that you are using your father's name, and that day that's the equivalent of a surname. And that's maybe he's signing the document as Yaakov, even though it's his father's name, it means family of Yaakov, or family of Jacob. That was what it mean, and maybe that's a good signature. The Gemara says, "Loshavikin ishmei v'chatim shmadu avua." Person does not use his name and only uses his father's name. It's one thing if it's incorporated together, you'd write Mr. Simon Wolf. You wouldn't just write Mr. Wolf when it's not clear what that means, or you wouldn't just use your father's name, family Jacob. That's not enough in order to garner a defined signature, and people won't do that without writing their name. So when it says, Dilma Simona Shabio, maybe he made it into a, call it stamp. Because remember earlier in the Masechta, we had the HaRav Tzier Kavra, that Rav, for his signature, instead of actually signing his name, he used to draw a fish. B'chanina Charuta, and B'chanina would draw a palm branch. Rav Chista Samach, he had a Samach, must have been some fancy Samach that he drew. Rav Oshayin Ayin, for the Ayin in his name. Rav Bar Rav Huna Tzier Makuta, the mast of the ship. So each of them had a picture that represented their signature or their name, as if that was their stamp or their seal. And maybe that's the same thing over here. He's using his father's name as his seal or his picture, as we call it. So when it says, "L'chatzev inish l'shvuya l'shma davu asimono," people don't make their father's name into their seal or into their signature. I mean, that it's one thing if it's Reuven ben Yaakov, but it's another thing just to make your father's name your seal or your signature. That doesn't make sense. That's a misappropriation of your father's name, and people won't do that. So here the Gemara asks a simple question, the one that you asked on the Mishnah, which is, let the first column be kosher with the two Hebrew edim, which are written right to left, and let the left column be kosher with the two Greek edim, which are written left to right. And that would make a lot of sense, because you have edim running right to left, they should be with the right paragraph. And you have edim running left to right, they should be with the left paragraph. Even though the two Hebrew edim are sitting between the Greek edim, it's very easy to see that one's going right to left and one's going left to right. And that should make both of them kshirim. That's not. Get shiktavo ivrit, veidav yivanit. If you have a get that's written in Hebrew and its signatories are in Greek, yivanit, if the get is in Greek, veidav ivrit, and its signatories are in Hebrew, kasher, that's not a problem. I mean that here we have both gitin written in Hebrew, first on the right column and then on the left column, and they have Greek edim signed under it. That's not a problem that they want the gets written right to left, and they're signed left to right. That works fine. So why don't we say that the Hebrew edim deal with the right column, and the Greek edim are dealing with the left column, and both gitim are kshirim. If you're going to tell me the reason is because you have a gap of two rows, the two rows are the Hebrew signatories to the first get. You have the right column and the left column, which are parallel. Then at the bottom, from right to left, you have the first two edim, which are the Hebrew edim. Then below them, you have the two Greek edim. So there's a gap of two lines between the Greek edim and the get that they're signing on, the left column that they're signing on, because of the Hebrew edim in between. The only problem there is if there's a gap, if there's a space. If there's a space, then we say that the edim are not connected to the get that's above it. But if you fill in that space, even with meaningless material, that's fine because then you left nothing over. Or in other words, in the modern day, the way that they have this in a contract is, this page is intentionally left blank. So why do they write that? Because otherwise it looks like the signature page is not connected to the document itself. So when you write, this page is intentionally left blank, it shows you that, don't look at this as a space, as if to say that there's a separation between the signature and the document above, but rather, the signature is directly connected to whatever is written above it. So also over here, as long as there is no empty space, you can say that the signatures are connected to the get above, even though there are Hebrew edim in between that are dealing with the right column, the Greek edim should be dealing with the left column and have no problem. And as Rashi notes over here, it's cute the way Rashi brings it down, brings the halacha from sukkah. In the schach of a sukkah, we know that if you have airspace in the sukkah, then it's posel the sukkah, it splits the sukkah in half and causes you problems. That airspace has to be up to 3 tefachim is level and is fine. Or 3 tefachim and beyond is problematic because that airspace now separates the sukkah into 2 pieces. If you don't have a kosher sukkah on each side, you have a problem. On the other hand, if you have schach pasul is only posel or separates the sukkah in half when it's 4 tefachim. When it's 4 tefachim wide, or if it's on the edge, we have dofen akuma, it can be up to 4 amot. But there, you see that schach pasul has a higher threshold than airspace. So what Rashi is pointing out is, sometimes the davar pasul is better than blank space. And similar to the statement over here, if you fill in the space between the get and the actual signatories with krovim, relatives, who are psulim to sign the get, nevertheless, that is better than a situation in which you leave it blank. If you leave it blank, we have a problem, because the edim aren't signing directly on the get, and then maybe there was something else written there, there was a tnai that was erased, or maybe they were signing on something else and they didn't see the get, they're not connected to the get. Whatever the reason is, we would see them as being separate from the get. So then if you write in edim psulim, even though they can't be there and they're not meaningful at all, just filling in the blank space connects the kosher edim to the get itself, and that works. And that's the parallel Rashi says to the schach of a sukkah, that better to have it be schach pasul than to have it be empty space. And same thing over here. Better have edim psulim in there rather than have blank space. So in the Gemara in the end says, ha, tani zire shneim sherim, eno chanami, that we have a Mishnah, or a version of the Mishnah, according to Ze'iri, that says both Gitin are Kshirim, and Eino Chanami. Both Gitin are Kshirim, the Hebrew Edim are covering the right column, and the Greek Edim are covering the left column. V'tana Didon, what about the author of our Mishnah? Why did he only say one of them is Kashir? Dilma Gundalit. Gundalit Chatim, he cited as Gundalit. V'kulu Echad Hu de Chatimi, and therefore they're all signed on the same one. So Rashi notes over here, the word Gundalit means out of order. Gundalit means to mix up. There are different meanings, but they all lead to the same thing, which is maybe the second aid or the Greek edim followed the Hebrew edim, which is that the natural way for the Hebrew edim to sign is right to left. The natural way for the Greek edim to sign is left to right. But if the Greek edim come and they see the people above them wrote right to left, they also wrote right to left instead of left to right because they wanted to conform to the signatures that were above. So now we have a problem. When it's written Yosef ben Shimon over there, we don't know if that's Shimon ben Yosef or Yosef ben Shimon. And that means it's a possibility that you have 3 or 4 edim signed on one get and nothing on the other get, or one on the other get. And we just don't know because of this fear of Gundalit, this fear that they flip their signature to conform. And that's why we have an issue over here. As Rashi notes over here, Kol shalokim min hagan. Anything that's not written in the normal way that you would write it is kare gundalit. He says, "Vareiti b'tshuvat agonim, adam hamishtamesh biyad smalit, korim lo bimkomenu gundalia." That someone who writes with their left hand instead of their right hand is called a gundalia. Or, in other words, the same way that in Latin, I've always mentioned this, that right hand is dexter, left hand is sinistar. Again, the negative associations with left. And same thing over here, the way that in the Tanakh, a lefty is described as an iter yad, someone who's non-functional on the right side, therefore they go to the left hand. Oh, person will only use their left hand if their right hand is not functional. So they're called an iter yad. Over here, a gundalia, this unusual or not normal person uses their left hand. And so that would mean the same thing over here. Anybody who changes the order, similarly over here, in other words, that you have someone who flips the order, it's interesting over here because you're talking about writing right to left and left to right. And therefore, the hands could represent that difference, which is that right hands would write right to left, and the left hand would write left to right. And that's what it means, that he switched, flipped it. He did the wrong thing, similar to switching from right hand to left hand. So now the psul, as we've established over here, is that we're afraid of the order. So now we don't know which get the signatories are really under. And because of that problem, we can't be machshir the gitin. And for that reason, we say that only the right one is kasher. Because the right one, we know at least the first two were Hiradim. They didn't go to copy anybody, so we're certain that they wrote right to left. Our fear is that the Greek Edim underneath it, who naturally would have written left to right, and therefore should have been Machshir, the second column, which is the way that Ze'iri reads it, and it is Kasher. There we're afraid of the Gunda Aliyah, that they actually flipped their names, and they're actually signing under the right column rather than the left column, because they wanted to conform to the Hebrew signatories that were above them. And now, the next case in the Mishnah, which is Eirachad Ivri ve'Eirachad Yivani, V'lit kasher hai be'Eirachad Ivri ve'Eirachad Yivani. V'hai be'Eirachad Ivri ve'Eirachad Yivani. Why don't we have it that the right column is kasher because you have a Hebrew aid and a Greek aid, and then on the left side you have a Hebrew aid and a Greek aid. This is what drives Rashi in the Mishnah to explain like he does. Because the easier way to explain this is, let's be makshir both of them. Let us say now that you have Hebrew, Greek, Hebrew, Greek. So let's say the two Hebrew Edim are on the right column, and the two Greek Edim are on the left column, even though they are alternating, we'll suggest that the Hebrew Edim are signed on the right side, and the Greek Edim on the left side. It's not a problem, because there's no space between them. The only space that's there is the other aid, and that's fine. Why don't we read it that way? That would be the simplest way to read the question of the Gemara. Yet the Gemara seems to say, no, have the first one be kasher with the Hebrew and Greek aid, and the second one kasher with the Hebrew and Greek aid. This is where Rashi's girsa is what we have in the Gemara, and that's what compels Rashi on the Mishnah to explain the way he did. So now if you look back in the Mishnah, the picture that Rashi wrote makes sense. Because Rashi is over here, Ruvain ben Yaakov, and so Ruvain ben Yaakov is signed under the right column. Because Ruvain is his first name, Ben Yaakov. The second way that he has is you drop down a row, and instead of writing Yosef Ben under the first column, he writes Yosef under the left column, and finishes it up, Ben Shimon, under the right column after dropping down a row. But remember, when you write Yosef Ben Shimon in Greek, it really means Shimon Ben Yosef. That means that Shimon is now signed under the right column, because it's Yosef Ben Shimon, but the Ben Shimon is under the right column. So now you have the Hebrew aid under the right column, and you have the Greek aid under the right column. That's what Rashi is trying to create. And same thing with the next one. When he says, Kat Ben Levi, he has Kat signed on the left column, and then has Ben Levi drop down a row on the right column. That means that Kahat is signed on the left column. And then when you have Yachzeel Ben Naphtali, remember that the Greeks signed the other way, so that's really Naphtali Ben Yachzeel, and then the latter two are signed on the left column. And that's why Rashi comes up with this complex case in order to conform to the Girsa in the Gemara. And Rashi acknowledges that there was another opinion out there that had them written on one row, meaning that Edivri, Edivani, Edivri, Edivani, but he says, I can't make it fit the language. And you see that Rashi is being compelled by his Girsa in the Gemara to explain the way that he does. But again, the Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosafot says that there was an alternate Girsa, and according to that Girsa, that allows you to explain it in that way without having the problems that Rashi has. And you can see in the Balei Tosafot, they basically say that without that girsa, there's a much simpler way, and they have an alternate girsa that Rabbeinu Tam brings that just simply says that they should be kasher. And the way that I explained it before is that the two Hebrew edim should be assigned to the right get, and the two Greek edim should be assigned to the left get, even though they are alternating here. You should be able to do that. The answer to the Gemara again is going to be the same thing, which is, that's not Eirachad Ivri ve'Eirachad Yivani kasher. If you have a single get with one Hebrew aid and one Greek aid, that's fine. Ha'atani Ze'iri, Shneim Ksherim. And Enochanami, Ze'iri has, again, a Mishnah that reads that both of them are Ksherim. But Tani Gidon, Artana worries about the same thing that he worried about before, which is Dilma Gundolit Chatim. Maybe he flipped V'tlata Achad V'chada Echad. Three of them are signed on one get, and one of them signed on the other get. Because, again, according to Rashi here, first Hebrew name is definitely written in order. The other one may not be, because they might be copying him or may not be copying him. So that's our problem here, is we don't know if they're just trying to conform to the standard of the first aid, or if they're really writing the way they normally write, and therefore you could end up with the possibility that three edim are signed on one and one is on the other, or even possibly four edim are on one. For Rashi, that's less likely, because Rashi has it that he splits the names between them, so it's clear that at least one of the edim seems to belong to the left get, and he hasn't flipped his name. But because of this fear of Gundalit, our Tana says that the Gitim are not Ksherim. Alright, so next Mishnah. Shi'er Miksat the Get. He left over a portion of the Get, V'katavo B'daf HaSheni, and then wrote it on the second column. Basically, as a klaf, he ran out of space in the first column, so he continues up on the left column. V'edim Ilamato. And the Edim are signed at the bottom. Kasher. Then that's fine. I mean, they're signed at the end of the Get. wherever it ends, on the second column, then they're signed there, it's kasher. Chatamu edim birosha daf. If the edim signed at the top of the daf, minatzad, on the side, umeacharav, or av, on the back side, beget pashut. In the case of a get pashut, where you don't sign on the back, you sign on the front side. Pasul. All those are pasul, because the edim are not signed at the bottom of the get. Now, the way that they have to be signed is at the bottom of the get, or, in other words, that they have to have their gag. The top of the names of the edim have to match up with the bottom of the get in that order. If you sign at the top, on the side, on the back of the get, none of those are considered to be signatures. And the reason being, because we assume that either the edim just wrote their names or signed there, and then the person filled in the get afterwards. Or the other possibility is that, according to Rashi, this signature was matched up with a get that was above it, and they sliced off the get above it, and then these signatures are now looking like they referenced the lower get when they really referenced the get that was above it. Hekif rosho shel zeh b'tzad rosho shel zeh. If you had two gitin on a single cloth, two columns, and they have head-to-head. So you have a get that starts, goes down, and then if you flip the paper over, there was another get going down the other way. So you have them starting in the middle, and then going out towards the edges. And then you have the signatures in the middle. Ve'edim be'emsa, shnehem psulim. Both of those are pasul, because no matter what, the edim are problematic there. The edim obviously do not read with one of the gitin, because the edim are facing one direction. And so therefore, they're backwards for one of the gitin, because you start in the middle and wrote out towards the two sides. So you have one get going out to the top, or one to the bottom, or right to the left. Whichever it is, you have two gitin that start in the middle, and then they move outwards. That is pasul, because the edim that are signed in the middle now are either not read with one of those two gitin, and the get that they're in the same direction as, they're signed on top. And we just said, if you sign on top, that's not a good signature. Now, Tosfot over here asks, why is this not already incorporated from the ratio of the Mishnah, where we said that if it's written on top, the signatures are no good? So here where you sign in between the two tops of the gitin, it's the same as being signed on the top, and it should be pasul and obvious from the ratio. According to Rashi, it might be easy to understand what the chiddush is here, is because Rashi said before that the chashash, what they didn't mean signed on top, is that they were signed at the bottom of another get that was sliced off. Now they look like they belong to this get when they really belong to another get. But over here in our case, where they're signed between the two gitin, it's clear that there was no other get here that they're being sliced off from. And therefore, maybe you would think to be makshir the edim in this case, and that's what the chiddush here is, that even in a case where it's obvious that they're signing on one of the two documents, there still is a chashash. That chashash might be what we suggested before, that they just wrote stam, and then they wrote the gitim afterwards. Or, the other way to explain it, as Tosfot says, is it's a case where, in the ratio of the Mishnah, is a case where the signatures of the edim are facing away from the ktav. And over here, in this case, it's a case where the signatures of the edim are working with the ktav. And that's why you would have a havamina, maybe it's kasher over here. The answer is no, kamashman, that it's still pasul. So fol shazeh b'tzad shofar shazeh, they started at the edges of the klaf, and then they wrote towards the middle. So you have one starting on the right, one starting on the left, and they meet in the middle. Or one at the top, one at the bottom, and they meet in the middle. And then you have edim signed in the middle between them, edim b'emtza. There, etche edim nikraim yimo kasher. There, the edim are upside down for one of the gitin, and right side up for one of the gitin. So the side that they're right side up for, that get is kasher. The one that they are upside down for is pasul. Rosho shel zeh b'tzad sofo shel zeh. If they're written in column, single column, you have one get, then it stops, and then you have a second get over there. Ve'edim b'emtza, and edim are between the two gitin. Etche edim nikrim b'sofo kasher. The edim are machshir, the get that's above them, but the get that is below them is pasul, because for the first get, they're written underneath it, which is where they're supposed to be. For the second get, they're written above it, which is no good. Get shekatavo ivrit, and this is what we just quoted above, bring as proof, which is that if you have a get that's written in Hebrew, ve'edav yivanit, and the signatories are Greek, yivanit, the get is written in Greek, ve'edav ivrit, and the signatories are written in Hebrew, edachad ivrit, ve'edachad yivanit, or you have whichever language that gets written in, but one of the signatories is writing in Hebrew, and one is writing in Greek, all of those are kasher. Tav sofer ve'ed, if you have the handwriting of the sofer, and one aid, kasher. Now again, the Gemara is going to work on this. This is what we already mentioned numerous times in the Masechta. There's a machloket as to whether ktav sofer here means the handwriting of the sofer, or ktav sofer means the signature of the sofer. Ish ploni aid, kasher. This is the Mishnah we quoted before, that if you have your name and an aid, that makes it into a good signature. You don't need Ben, whoever. Ben Ishplani, if you don't write your name, but simply the son of aid, that is also kasher. And again, as we learned in the Gemara, you need the word aid there to make that kasher. Ishploni ben Ishploni, without the word aid, velokatav aid, kasher. Again, there you don't need the word aid because he has his full name that is mentioned there. Kachayuni, kiyad dachi b'shalayim osim. This is the way the people, or the holy ones, the careful ones in Yerushalayim used to sign. As Rashi says, noagim, shloshanam k'tzara. They used to write in brevity. They did everything in a brief manner. So therefore, lo chotmim aid. They never wrote the word aid. They would simply write ploni ben ploni. That's it. Again, today, we do everything. We say ploni ben ploni, aid, in order to cover all the bases. But the Nikiya Dad Yerushalayim just to say is to sign ploni ben ploni. And now the last line here is, katav chanichato v'chanichata. If they wrote his nickname or her nickname, kasher. If that's the name by which they go by their nicknames, then that is fine because we've defined who the individuals are in the get. Rashi defines chanichato here as shem levai shel mishpacha kula. It is the general name or generic name by which the whole family is known. Then it's less clear if we're talking about the parties or the edim. Over there, according to the way Rashi explained, it seems more likely that we're speaking about the edim and that they're signing by their family nickname that is allowed. Now, that brings up the question the Gemara in Bava Metzia says, I think that's in Bava Metzia Nun Chet, Kol Mechanesh Shem Lechaviro, anyone who gives a nickname to his friend, Eino Ben Olam Haba. He's not a Ben Olam Haba. We also find in the Gemara Megillah and Daf Chav Zayin, Rabbanon there were describing things that they did. Take the lead. You should give me credit because I did this. One of the things is that, Kelo Chiniti Shem Lechavirai. I never gave a nickname to my friends. Over there, the Gemara sounds like they're doing something like Fnim Ishur Tadin. So how do we reconcile between the Lifnim Ashur Tadin over there in Megillah, versus what's written in Bava Metzia that says you call anybody a nickname, Eino Ben Olam Haba. So Tosfot over there distinguishes between the two of them and says that the nickname that's spoken about in the Gemara in Bava Metzia is a derogatory or negative nickname that's associated with the individual. That's problematic, and Eino Ben Olam Haba. The Mechanesh Shem de Chaviro is a nickname that the family is known by. It's not the derogatory. And that's what the Tana was doing the Fnim Ishur Tadin. He didn't call anybody by their nickname. The Tosafot Rosh brings the distinction of the Tosafot and then adds on an additional distinction, which is important to our case over here, which is that he says that the one in Bava Metzia is a derogatory name or a nickname that is negative, and that's why it's Eino Ben Olam Haba. The one in Megillah is describing the person's name not being their name, but calling them Ben Yaakov. Instead of calling them Reuven, you call them Ben Yaakov, which is very common today. People call each other by their last names. Or they call, people use a nickname like Wolfie to call me because that's my last name. So what he says over there in Megillah is the Fnim Ishur Tadin. Even though Ben Yaakov is not derogatory or Wolfie is not derogatory, still the proper thing to do is call the person by their first name or by their proper name. If you call them Mr. Wolf or Simon, you should call them by their names and not by their last names. And that was the Milo over there. And Rashi over here, when he says that the chanichato, he says shem levai shel mishpacha kula. That is the nickname of the whole family. And again, that's what Tosafot is describing, the distinction that he makes over there. One is a derogatory name of a gam mishpacha, and the other one is just simply a nickname of the mishpacha. But you see there that they use these nicknames reference the family, or a gam mishpacha, and that's how they refer to people. And the one that is problematic in Bava Metzia is the one where the name is derogatory or calling out a pgam mishpacha. The other one is simply just a name by which the family is known or the individual is known. But again, Rashi over here says it's a family nickname. And so too, that seems to be what Tosfot and Tosfot Rosh are describing in Bava Metzia and Megillah, that we're talking about a family name. Gemara says, V'licho shtilma hanetre gite havu, v'tremele zman dekamo, v'edim debatro. Why don't we say over here, well, you have the get that runs over to the second column. So yeah, the first column has the get with the date on top of it. The second column has the end of the get with the signatures. The Gemara says here, why don't we worry about the fact that the klaf was once bigger? And the klaf that was bigger had a get that started above on the left column and finished where the left column is. And a get on the right side continued further down. And this guy got smart, and he wanted to cut out pieces of the get. So what he did was he matched up the gitin. He sliced off the case to match it up, where the first column would end in the place that the second column begins. Obviously, they're not parallel. They're offset from each other, the left one being higher than the right one. Therefore, you could slice off the top of the left get, slice off the bottom of the right get, and end up with a get that looks like it's a single get in two columns. So why aren't we choshesh for that? And he got it to line up where he has the date from the first one and the edim of the second one. It looks like it's a single get. But now he eliminated the problems from the first get, the problems from the second get, made it into one get. And he cut off the zman of the second one, the edim dekama, and the edim on the first one. Slice off the bottom of the first column, slice off the top of the left column, the second column, and now he has a single get, even though they're really two gitin. And even though in the previous Mishnah, we tried to figure out how we could make both Gitin Kshirim, and over here we're taking one get and trying to make it into two Gitin. So Tosfot over here says, because there's circumstantial evidence in the case before, where his name and his father's name were under the two different columns, there was circumstantial evidence that it really was two signatures under the Gitin and it should work. Over here, we don't have that type of circumstantial evidence, and therefore we're going to assume the opposite way, which is, possibility that this is two gitin and not one get. And Rav Amarav kishesh revach milamato, that there's a margin left on the bottom. So there's a margin left on the bottom. It's clear that the first column didn't have something continuing afterwards because otherwise there'd be no margin there. But Dilma zman debacha migos guzio. So maybe he still cut off the top of the second one. Okay, so the bottom of the second one you explained to me. Gemara says, Amarav kishesh revach milamato. Just like we said before, there's a margin on the bottom. There's a margin on top. So if you have margin on the bottom, margin on top, it's clear that there was nothing after that right column, and that was not a middle of a get, but rather continue on the second column. And the left one has a margin on top, so there was nothing written above it before. So that's why it makes it into a single get, and not this chashash that it was two kitin that he sliced up. Tosfot over here says, at the top Tosfot, Mikan yesh lach shir gitin ushtarot shein ben revach klau. Lo lamala, lo lamata. So here, from here, you can be makshir, a shtar, or a get, that has no margin on the top, and no margin on the bottom. Because the only reason here that we require the margin is because you ran over to the second column. Implying that if you were all in one column, you wouldn't need a margin there at all. So what do you fear now? The fear there is that he's going to slice off the date from the top, or he's going to slice off something from the bottom. The way that the shtarot are written are that the major information is on the top and the date is on the top. So if he slices it, he's actually going to hurt himself. So the way that the gitin or the way that the shtarot are written, it doesn't leave you the opportunity to slice off the top or the bottom if there's no margin there, because you're going to lose the major aspects. On the bottom, you're going to lose the edim. The top, you're going to lose the date and the core of the get, which is Ariat Muter the Choladam. Or in a shtar, you're going to lose the date and the core aspects of the shtar. So therefore, without a margin, we don't worry about it being chatuch. We only worry about it when you're running over to a second column. Then we worry that there's a margin there to indicate that it wasn't cut, but intentionally it went on to the second column. Where it says, V'dilma imluche imlich. V'dilma imluche imlich. Maybe he changed his mind and wrote it. Meaning that he began to write a get on the right side. He changed his mind and said, you know what, I'm not giving the get. And that's mevatel the first half. And then when he says, you know, later on, I do want to give the get, he continues to write on the left column. The problem is, when he goes to write on the left column, he already was mevatel the right column from being a get. Now you don't have a kosher get. Gemara says, that's not a problem. Dichtiv hariat lamata umuteret lamalo. That it says, hariat on the bottom right, and muteret is the first word on the second column. Hariat muter the choladam is the core aspects of the get. So over there, even if he changed his mind, he only wrote hariat. Hariat is not a get to start with, that he can be mavat al the get. It's only a get when you write hariat muteret the choladam. So therefore, even if he changed his mind, it doesn't matter, but more likely he didn't change his mind because it says hariat, and then muteret the choladam. Nobody stops in the middle of a sentence when they want to change it. You get to the end of the sentence and you decide. The fact that the words at the end of the first column are in the middle of a sentence makes it clear that he was writing there and continued up to the top, and it wasn't at two separate occasions. So that Tosfot also mentions over here that Rashi says that the regretting the get means that he's mevatel the first half of the get, and then continues later, it doesn't work. Tosfot says it doesn't make sense. We know that if you're mevatel the get, choser megarishbo, you can use it later on. So then, what's the problem? Mi'amar Rabbeinu Ezra Navi, tele'el shenigmar get en yochol levatlo, Vakshalon yichtav kulo, moder Rav Nachman, deino chozer magarish bo.
So he says, he brings up a chiddush here, that the only time we say you cannot be mevatel a get, or if you're mevatel a get, you're allowed to reuse it, is if the get is complete. But if the get is halfway through and you're mevatel it, you could ruin the get to the point where you can't use it again. And that will explain this even for Rashi. But Omer Reed, the Yerul Faresh, the Reed says he'd rather explain it this way. The Shem Ha'itchil Lichtov Aget, the Shem Ish Acher, the Mlach Simo, the Shem Zeh, that maybe began to write it for someone else, and he finished it off for another party. So that's our fear over here, where he writes in the one column and finishes it off in the other column, is that maybe he changed in the middle who he's writing the get for, and that's our fear over here. Vidoma Yitzramile, so maybe that's just what happened. He got to the bottom of the page and it says, Hariat, and he says, you know what? I'm going to change my mind. That's what happened over here. Where it says, Kulei Hai Lo Chashinan. That's just so far-fetched a case. Here, where he has a margin on top, margin on the bottom, and the words end in the middle of the paragraph and continues up top, and we say that, oh, just happened to be that he ran out of space at that time and he decided to stop and continue later. That's just crazy. That's a far-fetched case. The last thing Tosfot mentions over here is, Kulei Hai Lo Chashinan. Hainu Dafka Le'imlich Ben Hariat Le'muteret Lo Chashinan. That's only if it's in the middle of a sentence. You still require margin on top, margin on the bottom. Otherwise, we worry about the fact that you sliced it off. So you still need the margins and all the other trappings of the get in order to ensure that the guy wasn't fooling around with the get. Rav Ashi Amar, Rav Ashi says, you can know from the cloth itself. You don't need to say here that there's a margin on top, margin on the bottom. You can simply look at the cloth. A cloth that is cut has a smoother edge and the cloth is of a single thickness throughout. On the other hand, if you leave the edges on there, the edges have a sensation of being not cut, but the natural end of the cloth. And so he says you could see where they cut the document or didn't cut the document. Now, if he cut it, you would need a margin there to show that it wasn't cut intentionally and that there was really one get. But if it's not cut, and you just take the natural parchment, if you get a natural piece of parchment, it's not square, right? It has edges that come out, and as Rashi talks about here, they used to put weights on the edges to stretch it out. So the edges had marks of showing that they were edges of the cloth, and therefore you would know that he never cut anything. There are indications that was the end of the cloth. But that indication is in the shaping of the cloth, and then you don't need this, because you know he didn't cut it. It's obvious that he didn't cut it. So that's Rav Ashi's alternative of how you can come up with this. All right, I'm going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Peichet Amud Aleph.